From Local 12 Sports, it's the Skinny Podcast. Now, here's Richard Skinner.
Welcome into the Skinny Podcast. It's a special Bengals post-draft edition. I'm Richard Skinner, Local12.com, digital sports columnist and editor with Rick Broering. One day after the Bengals completed the NFL draft, taking all 10 picks, which shocked me, making them in the slots that they were slotted, which shocked me, and taking two tight ends, which shocked me. But they did do some good things as well, and Rick and I are here to break it down. Rick, first and foremost, I'll get your take on the draft. What did you think?
I thought there were a lot of surprising things, and I look at it and I see four of the first five picks, in my opinion, have some real question marks. So I'm anxious to get your thoughts on all of these decisions. And I guess, first of all, Skinny, without talking about any of the picks individually, because I want to break them down, sum up the draft for us with a sentence or a thought. Like, what was, when it all got finished and you kind of took a deep breath and before you went to go get your best beer of the year with all the other media people, what was your thought about the draft?
The top 30 visits were very important to them. Six of their first five picks were all guys that they brought in for top 30 visits. Six of the picks were top 30 visits. And I think the other part is they wanted to get bigger and more physical in the trenches. And they already are big on the offensive line, right? But I think they wanted a little bit more of that on the defensive line to battle the teams they have to fight in the AFC North. I mean, they were terrible last year against the North. And so I think they had that in mind, which is why they probably went around early for McKinley Jackson, why they went to defensive tackles on the second day of the draft. And so I think they had those decisions in mind. I think they did do a good job attacking positions in need. The tight ends left my head scratching a little bit, and I know we'll get to that too.
Yeah, I mean, I think if anyone's listening to this podcast, then they're probably into this enough to have already seen who the Bengals drafted. I'm not going to read through the entire list, but we will talk about most of these guys individually probably. And I want to start with, you know, typically when you grade a draft, you have to wait years to actually figure out what's happened with these guys and how good of a draft it was. So at this point, we're really going to be talking a lot about the guy taken with the first round pick. And in this case, it was the offensive tackle, Amarius Mims. Skinny, what were your thoughts when they took him with the first pick? Because I think there is some hand-wringing here because of his injury history.
I get some of that. It's not an extensive injury history. I mean, he did have some ankle reconstruction done, a tightrope procedure done in the ankle. But trust me, these guys are pretty fully vetted health-wise before the draft. And so some guys may come with more risks than others. But I think these guys are fully vetted. It would have been interesting to see what they would have done if Byron Murphy had been there, but he wasn't. So they had to make a choice. And I get some of the angst that, oh yeah, if you're in to win now, you got to take somebody that's going to give you immediate need and fill an immediate need. But at the same time, you don't want to reach at that point. I mean, so who would you have wanted them to take? I know people said Brian Thomas of LSU, the wide receiver who went one pick after. And I would say, do you know how they had Brian Thomas graded? I sure don't. Maybe they didn't have him graded very well. And that's why, A, he slid to 19, and B, the Bengals passed on him, even though they did eventually get a wide receiver. I think they view Mims as a guy with a ton of upside who can kind of gradually get into this year. You may have to play him, and that may be all well and good. But starting next year, you end the revolving door at right tackle. And, Rick, I truly mean this. You can't keep paying your entire offensive line free agency money. I mean, they're paying four of those guys at the moment free agency money. You eventually have to hit on a draft pick. And it means, you know, you may whiff on this pick, unfortunately, but you have to keep swinging at it and hopefully eventually hit. He's a massive human being. He's athletic. I know there's not a lot of tape. There's eight games that he started in college. Didn't allow a sack in any of those eight games. Some of the tape of him just crushing people on run blocks is just impressive. And, you know, he makes his first career start as a sophomore 2 years ago in 2022 in the college football playoff semifinals against Ohio State, played well, and then started the championship game. Don't forget this. When you look at the eight starts, some of it, to your point, Rick, was injury related from this past season. But he's also at Georgia. There's dudes at Georgia. You're not coming in, even though he was a five-star recruit, top offensive lineman in the country, and yet he sat behind guys for a year and then finally got his chance and balled out. And then, unfortunately, as we mentioned, got hurt. But in those eight games, he balled out pretty well enough to say that guy is going to be a future road grader in the NFL.
Yeah, and like, let's not forget when we're talking about programs like Ohio State, Georgia, Alabama. I mean, Joe Burrow had to transfer because he wasn't going to be a starting quarterback at his initial school, Ohio State. And look what that blossomed into. Now, obviously, in the case of Mims, he didn't get to put the extensive highlights on tape that Joe Burrow did. And so there's a little bit more concern there. But I mean, there is legitimacy to the argument that you don't always get to start at these schools right away just because you're super talented. You might have a huge long-term all-pro NFL career. So I don't have a big issue with the pick because, like you said, once Byron Murphy was off the board, I thought he was the no-brainer, absolute slam dunk pick. Once he was gone, I don't know there was anyone else there that I would have rather had. Maybe there was an offensive tackle that you feel is more of a sure thing with that pick. I could have been talked into that. I don't have a big issue with it, but I would also say this totally 100% feels like the Bengals pick. This feels like the traditional Brown family. You see a big, it's flashy. It's got all the measurables to him. He could be the biggest, best thing that's ever happened. Or there is a little bit of concern that he might be a bust because there's not as much tape out there on him and he has an injury history. That always feels like the Bengals offensive line type of pick here. So it felt very much like a Bengals pick, in my opinion.
Yeah, I asked Mike Potts, the director of college scouting. We talked to him on Tuesday before the draft. And I didn't mention Mims by name because they're not going to talk in names. But I said, you know, there's a highly regarded offensive tackle out there who doesn't have a lot of tape on him. How do you weigh a guy who has a lot of starts versus a guy who doesn't have it? He said, I'd really rather have the guy with a lot of starts. But he did say this. He said, hey, if the tape that you have is really good, it's hard to bypass that. You can't just all of a sudden say, well, he only had a certain number of games played. If the tape is that good, then you have to take that into consideration as well. And I thought it was a good answer that made me go, okay, they really do like Mims a lot. And if he's there, they do take, because there was an offensive lineman the Steelers took two picks after that's a more polished, refined, has more snaps, offensive tackle. But if Mims has this just ginormous upside with enough quality tape to back it up, then I don't really have a problem with the pick. And the other part is you don't have to plug and play. Maybe if they had to plug and play him, it would have been the more polished finished product. But they don't have to do that right away. They can. He might. But they don't have to.
Yeah. So on that point, Skinny, it would concern me a little bit and surprise me a little bit even that this coaching staff was confident enough, this front office was confident enough to draft a guy with the future in mind here with their first round pick in this draft. Does that surprise you at all that they weren't concerned about getting an immediate impact guy necessarily?
No, because I think, again, we're talking not 5 years down the road. We're talking next year. I mean, he's going to be the starting right tackle next year, likely come hell or high water unless he's
sure, a complete. But we're talking about this year as allegedly a Super Bowl contending year too, right?
Right. So. I understand that. But again, the immediate need was defensive tackle, right? We'll all agree, like the definitive, but there was nobody there.
Right.
The main man was gone. Johnny Newton's rated 15 picks later. And so that's where, to their credit, you don't reach for that. Remember the year they drafted Billy Price? It was, we need a center. We got to have a center. And a couple of centers went before that and was like, well, hell, we need a center. Got to take him. And it was a bust. Those are bad decisions that you hopefully learn from. And so, hey, and listen, Mims might have to play in week one, week two, week five. And you better hope he's good enough to play at that point, too. So he might be for the immediate, but he doesn't have to be. And I don't have a problem with that.
All right. And the great thing about it was in the second round, it really worked out perfectly for them because they got an absolute slam dunk, it looks like, at the defensive tackle spot in Chris Jenkins. In my opinion, out of the first five picks, this is the only one that you look at and you say, no doubter, great pick. You expect perfect results out of this second round pick here.
Yeah, I got to tell you, he came in and on the conference call on the night he was drafted, he was great. He came in yesterday and we didn't really do a formal interview. They brought all the second and third round picks in. And he didn't really do a formal interview. He just came in the media room in between picks and sat down and talked with us. And he was fantastic. I mean, he is going to be such a great guy to talk to in the locker room. I think he's going to be the same guy, win or lose. He's a guy that's very confident in himself. Kelsey Conway, the Inquirer, they actually went to high school together. So it was kind of a cool little icebreaker for all of us, for him to talk to her about the high school stuff. And then she did pop a question and said, can you get bigger? And he says, what, do I look small to you? She said, no, I'm just kind of wondering, can you get bigger? He said, no, I'm not comparing myself to him. He goes, was Aaron Donald very big? And it's, the truth was, he really wasn't. He goes, I just want to make clear, I'm not comparing myself to him. Was Aaron Donald very big? And I'm like, this guy's got it, man. He comes from an NFL family. His dad played in the league. So he knows all about those things. I really root for this guy just on a personal basis, because I thought he was fantastic.
And that matters. I mean, to me, that matters. The fact that he has that background, that pedigree, those bloodlines, you've already seen how his dad blossomed and matured as a professional player. I mean, that stuff is legitimate, in my opinion. I love everything about this pick. You're getting maybe arguably the best defensive player on the best defense in the country last year. I think, you know, for what you needed going into this draft, I felt defensive tackle was the most important thing in this draft for this team. And I didn't love that they had to wait to the second round, but I thought they hit it out of the park with getting him.
Yeah, the other thing, too, if you look at some of his numbers, they're not going to jump off the charts at you. And he made a really good point to us as well. He said, listen, he goes, I think I can really increase my pass rush in the NFL and get more sacks than what it shows I got at Michigan. He goes, we had specific rules when we rushed the passer of what our job was. And he said, so sometimes our job was just to occupy people and let other people run free. It's the way the rush was designed. So he said, it's really why a lot of, you know, some of us don't have those big numbers because we were following the rules. And I'm like, well, that's a guy who's obviously coachable enough to follow what he's doing and not freelance and not wing it, not get out of rush lanes. And I think that's important, too. So if he can provide some of that interior pressure, maybe not create the sack, but allow the pocket to get pushed back into the quarterback, he has no escape route from the ends, he might cause more sacks. He may not get, you know, more than a handful like most defensive tackles, but he may cause more than what they've been able to cause the last few years.
Keeping contained when Lamar Jackson is in the backfield is an important thing in the NFL. Sure. And having a pro dad that understands, like, if you do your job and you play like a pro, you'll get drafted. They'll find you. You don't necessarily have to put up the numbers. Again, that's where things like that matter, in my opinion. Now, Skinny, I said we're not going to go through every pick here, but I do have to ask, what the hell happened in rounds 3 and 4 here? Because it felt like there are some real – I'm not against these picks. In fact, I can maybe argue that Jermaine Burton, the first pick in the third round, was my favorite pick of the draft. But, I mean, it feels like they really kind of went off the rails a bit here with the plan.
Yeah. No, Jermaine Burton's my favorite pick. He actually came in and sat with us yesterday as well and talked for a bit. I thought he was thoughtful. He was quiet. He handled himself well. He was asked about some of the things that were red flag issues, you know, such as the maturity issues. And he said, I honestly don't know where that came from. He said, you know, somebody says it and it just catches wildfire.
But does that almost concern you a little bit that he's like not acknowledging like, hey, I did some things that were wrong. I've gotten better. And like, also, the reason that I slid in this draft is because of those issues and not because I'm not uberly talented?
No, I thought he handled it well because we asked him the night before about the incident with the Tennessee fan, and I thought he answered it well. And okay. So we didn't rehash that. We just talked about, you know, the red flag stuff. I thought he handled himself very, very well. And again, just from a talent perspective, I don't know if you saw the video of the reaction in the Bengals draft room when they got him. I've never seen a reaction like that from them.
Right. So Zach Taylor is pounding his chair, Skinny. Have you? I mean, yes. I can't recall him ever doing that before on a draft pick.
Yeah. And the thing is, again, he slid because of some issues. Troy Walters, I think, is a terrific wide receiver coach. It's clearly a diva position. It always has been. I mean, he's got a couple of divas on his group at the moment that have checked the boxes and done just fine. And I think that's the same for Jermaine Burton. I think him being in a room with a Jamar Chase, him being in a room, even with T. Higgins being as disgruntled as he is, by the time the season rolls around, it's all going to be forgotten and he's going to play. I think it's good. I think the thing is, this kid can play in the slot. He can play outside. You can use him in a bunch of different ways this year. He gives you a third. The thing about Tyler Boyd, as his career evolved, the big play potential from Tyler Boyd started to evade.
It was gone.
Yeah, correct. And that's understandable. You know, he still was a dependable guy. Good, solid guy. Jermaine Burton has a chance to be a big play guy out of the slot. And I think that's a huge, huge factor. Then when T leaves after this year, and I think we all agree he's not going to be able to be re-signed, then Jermaine Burton slides outside. Maybe Charlie Jones has evolved even more this year and he's your slot. Or you go into next year's draft. You saw how many wide receivers were taken. I mean, Jermaine Burton's a first round talent taken in the third round. And again, there are some reasons for that. But I think the league realizes the wide receiver position is literally a plug and play position in this league anymore.
Yeah, I think that's big here. And I also, a couple reasons why I really love this pick. One, I would assume, if you're making a pick like this and you're maybe reaching or taking a guy with some questions in his history, you're going to have Joe Burrow's input when you make that pick. And if Joe Burrow is like, I like this guy, I want this guy, this is the guy I like, or if he had any input, I like that first and foremost. And the other part of that, and it kind of goes hand in hand with that, is Skinny, you've talked so much and you've done so much good work, real work that's noticeable, to put this locker room in a different spot where you have high quality guys that are about the right things, that have high character, that are true winners there. If you're really confident that you have the right guys and the right type of locker room, they should be able to get one guy in line with them and not let one guy tear it all apart. So from that standpoint, I don't really have any concerns about his quote unquote lack of maturity.
No, I'm with you in that regard. And again, I just getting a chance to sit down with him for a little bit and talk informally. He came off very, very well. Again, he may turn out to be a shithead for all I know. I didn't get that vibe. Maybe he was just tired from the trip. He flew all night from California to get there. He had to get up at 3 a.m. to catch a flight. Maybe he was just exhausted and that's why he was so laid back. But I love the pick. Now to your other point, the third round and the fourth round, I'm going to give you reasons for the first. McKinley Jackson was probably taken a round too early at a minimum, Rick, maybe even two rounds too early. But, and it is a big but, there weren't very many true run-stopping tackles left. There were only a couple on the board. And I think after they got Chris Jenkins, who's not a total run-stopper, he's kind of more of an all-around, I think they wanted a true first-down run-stopping tackle. And he was the best of the bunch that was left. And for them, it was – we're grabbing him because we're not gonna fool with this and not get our guy. This is where maybe not getting one in free agency, and there weren't many out there. This kind of maybe is the one that bit them in the ass a little bit, where they had to go up early to get a guy because it had to fill a specific need.
Paul Daner said they had to pay that tax finally for not getting a defensive tackle in free agency, and that's where it came, is drafting a guy right earlier than you wanted to.
No, that's exactly right. And so again, from a round value perspective, no, you didn't get value out of it, but you got your guy. And I think that's important too. The Eric All one is surprising to me in many degrees. If you read scouting reports on him, he's got a ton of talent and it's shown, but he's got a serious injury history. He had life-changing spinal surgery 2 years ago, and it was really more of a herniated disc, but I can only imagine the pain he was went through until he got that fixed. Then he had his knee injury midway through last year at Iowa. I think this is more of an eye on bring him in, worst comes to worst, and then they obviously drafted a second tight end. We'll let him heal up. If he's not ready to fully play, we can IR him and give him a red shirt year. We've drafted another guy, McLaughlin, who could be our fourth tight end. And you do need four tight ends. It's not like they weren't going to go into the season without four tight ends. One of those guys is always inactive on game day, so you carry – three on game day. Sometimes you might carry a fourth depending on situation. So on the surface, he was again probably around early, but I do see their plan in place. And it's like you didn't need tight ends, but okay, so you got a guy you really like that you can maybe ease into the thing and he doesn't have to play. And then you got the insurance policy as a fourth tight end. And I guess I'm okay with that. I still am left scratching my head a little bit, but I see the plan. And let's not forget, Mike Gesicki could become a full-time slot receiver. Maybe that's his only role, is he's not a first down tight end. They decide, hey, you're going on third downs to be a receiver. We'll rotate you and Tanner Hudson, and we need a three down tight end. And maybe it is Eric All. Maybe Eric All is healthy enough to push for, of all things, a starting spot or a rotational spot. So after I sat down and thought about it, I thought five tight ends sounds like one too many, but maybe it's not at the end of the day.
It's funny to me because it's like I talked about with Mims. It felt like they weren't really worried about having to get a guy that was going to contribute right away. And so you're left with maybe best player available, super high ceiling type guy with a lot of potential. Then you get into that like McKinley Jackson pick. We're talking about, well, you got to find a defensive tackle and play right away. You can't wait because what if he's gone and now you're left with nobody? So you have to reach and get him. And then you get to this Eric All pick and like, you're right. This feels like a complete flyer, Skinny. Like they're just, This guy has such potential that we feel like if everything goes perfect, he could be a real game changer. And I think you had this in your write-up when you were, by the way, on local12.com, you graded every single pick, have a capsule on every guy, good write-up there. But I think you had some advanced analytics site had tweeted something out that if you're looking for the next Sam Laporta from this draft, there are three guys that fit the statistical profile. And one of them was Eric All, and which is interesting because he's got, it seems like it's, again, maybe some limited tape, definitely some real injury concerns there. But if everything goes right, he has real upside, real potential. I kind of love that aspect of this. Now, maybe there's too much of that going on here at the top of this draft for the Bengals. Maybe there are more needs that they should have looked to fill in a spot like this. But when you're getting into the fourth round, I feel like everything's pretty hit or miss at that point. I don't mind a guy with real upside like this.
Yeah. And again, I go back to Mike Potts. He talked about the importance of hitting on guys in the top 100, and that's third round. The third round ends at pick 100. And I think they see those guys as starters. And I think anything after that is depth piece, potential, you know, ignore a red flag with an injury thing because of the potential's there. And I think that's what you did here. You know, then they go fifth round corner, who had a better 22 than 23, but comes from a high level program in TCU. And I think the fact that after the draft was over, it felt like when the draft completed, it was like, okay, you really didn't fill the depth piece at corner all that much. You got one guy. Well, then as soon as the draft's over, the questions asked about where's Dax Hill in the mix. And the answer is now he's a cornerback. And so they've pushed him in that direction. I also think there's going to be a veteran signing. I mean, it won't shock me if we see Xavien Howard here. It really wouldn't. They've got money to do it. I think Lou Anarumo coached him in Miami and when he was a secondary coach. It just feels like the fact they didn't get a corner earlier, that it was like, we're going to get a depth piece. It feels like you need a veteran presence there because, again, we don't know if Dax Hill is going to be a good corner. He certainly didn't work out at safety like everybody hoped he might. But I think you need one more solid veteran piece, and I think they'll do it. And you asked me a couple of weeks ago, you know, what might they still do in free agency? And I said, you know, I think a veteran corner will come in at some point. I think you're going to see that here in the next week or two.
All right, Skinny, a couple quick fire questions here for you. Who is the most likely to make an instant impact out of these draft picks?
I think Burton. I really do. So I think Burton and Jenkins.
What about your favorite pick of the draft? Is it Burton?
It is. I did like, believe it or not, I like the seventh round center. He's a little undersized, Matt Lee, but he's got a lot of college starts under his belt. He was a second team All ACC selection, and it gives you a chance to see how he works out as a backup to battle Trey Hill. And, you know, if he shows something, then maybe he is in line to be a starter next year. And if not, then you know that you have to go probably in another free agent direction or try to get Ted Karras for one more year. I thought that was an interesting one to me. The safety out of Ole Miss, Dejon Anthony. What a great story. He started at Division II Shepherd.
Yeah, pretty cool.
Then moved to Liberty where he walked on, hardly played at either place, then goes to Ole Miss and starts this past year. And he feels like this is just the guy who keeps ascending up the ladder. And I think he'll battle Tyson Anderson for the last safety spot.
Yeah, it'll be like a 30 for 30 or a Disney movie or something if he somehow works out one day. Skinny, least favorite pick is, are we going with that McKinley Jackson pick?
Probably that or the all pick. And again, I did explain it away, so I try to be fair here, but it still leaves you scratching your head where I think the two things I use the most and lean on are Dane Brugler's beast guide from The Athletic and the NFL.com profile. And both of them had him in the fifth or sixth round. So again, I get it. I still think you could have at least waited till the fourth. But back to what I said, that was the guy they wanted. And so they weren't going to wait around and maybe, you know, lose him to somebody else. So I get it. So, yeah, that's probably my least favorite just because of the round it was in. But I also can fully understand why they made that pick where they did.
Now, I mean, it felt like there were some real surprises in this draft, at least from my vantage point there. What was the biggest surprise in your opinion?
The two tight ends. I could have seen them going without any, to be honest with you, and then just going out and, you know, signing somebody as the fourth tight end or getting an undrafted free agent, let him be the fourth tight end. But I see I can vision the plan in place for why they did what they did. It was, okay, we really love all, you know, maybe even as early as next year, he's our full-time three-down tight end. We don't have to chase this free agency thing any longer. And because they've still got Drew Sample under contract, but Drew is more of a niche piece for them. He's not a three down tight end. That's been proven. So for them, it's that, but he's got some injuries. And so let's not throw all our eggs in that basket. We've got the extra six round pick. Let's take the other tight end there. I mean, Tanner McLaughlin did break Rob Gronkowski's record for catches by a tight end at Arizona. That's pretty good company.
Yeah, it's not bad. Skinny, just talking about, you were mentioning the visits, all the guys that came on visits were a lot of the guys they ended up selecting. Are there any other things that stand out as aspects that matter to the Bengals franchise when looking at draft picks? Like big winning programs seems to be a big thing. Teams that have had a lot of success.
Well, and you see the captain angle, right? That's the other thing with McKinley Jackson. He was a two-time captain at Texas A&M. Now he had a, you know, a red flag for arrest for marijuana possession in 2021, but his teammates obviously kind of went, and you can imagine, I mean, they don't care about that stuff.
It's legal in Ohio now. We're good. He's fine on that.
Correct. But obviously his teammates thought enough of him to make, I mean, defensive tackles don't feel like captains in college. They're more captains in the NFL, right? But he's a two-time team captain. I think that they weigh value in that significantly as well. They've always talked about that.
Yeah, so. Newsflash, college kids don't care about weed. Correct.
So, yeah, I mean, that's not even really a red flag. I guess, you know, you can call it a red flag if you will. But again, his teammates thought enough of him to make him a captain back-to-back years.
Yeah, definitely. Skinny, the way it broke down in the draft, 3 defensive linemen, 2 offensive linemen, 2 defensive backs, 2 tight ends, 1 wide receiver, no linebackers, no running backs, no punters or kickers. We thought there might be a punter potentially, and no quarterbacks taken, obviously. But looking at what they've already done in free agency, they've brought in a punter, Austin McNamara from Texas Tech. They've brought in a pair of running backs, Elijah Collins from Oklahoma State, Noah Kane from LSU. They've brought in a pair of linebackers, a couple more receivers. Anything that stands out to you there?
No, the fact they got McNamara was interesting. He was one of 4 punters, I believe, maybe 5, that Dane Brugler gave a graded round on. He was given a 7th round grade. In theory, I guess they could have used one of those 7th round picks to get him, but maybe they felt confident enough that, you know, once the draft was over, they felt like he wasn't going to go drafted, that they've already talked to him, I'm sure. And it was quick after the draft that they got him. And that happens a lot with these undrafted free agents. But that was a guy that, you know, when I looked at the draft and I was doing my individual position pieces, he was a guy I mentioned by name. And I thought, you know, maybe you do use one of those 7s. They didn't waste the draft capital and still got the guy. So it worked out perfectly for them. To the point of running back, I was a little surprised they didn't draft one, but we're talking about a guy that's competing with Chris Evans for the 4th running back spot. And again, maybe you could have used draft capital, but maybe where the board kept falling, guys that you liked, maybe were picked 3 picks earlier or, you know, were too far away to pick and you felt pretty good about free agency. And the same thing for linebackers. It feels like if ever there's a position where guys go from undrafted to success in the league, it feels like it's the linebacker spot.
Running back too.
Yeah. And those guys too. I mean, those guys always come in with the chip. They're trying to make the club. What better special teams fodder than those guys? And again, we're talking about the linebackers they're bringing in are competing with Devin Harper for the 5th line. I mean, they've got 4 linebackers, Logan Wilson, Jermaine Pratt, Akeem Davis-Gaither, Joe Bocci. You're competing for the 5th spot. And I'm okay with that. Again, if they had taken one, I wouldn't have been opposed to it. But yeah, the way it shook down to what you just mentioned, I think it works out pretty well.
You graded every single draft pick at local12.com. You've got write-ups about all of these guys. There's tons of stuff. I assume most people have already seen that if they're listening to this podcast. Is there more to come this week on draft stuff?
Yeah, I think tomorrow, and I just thought about that today, I think I'm going to put together a way too ridiculously early 53-man roster projection with seeing where all these draft picks might slot in. I'm goofy enough to do it. I'm not going to mention the person by name, and they got their way out of this, but they were asked yesterday to do a 2025 mock draft. And we all turned around and go, tell them to shove that up their blank. I said, a full 7-round Bengals 20. I said, yeah. I go, there's no way you can do that today. Give me a break.
All right. Well, that's all I got, Skinny.
Great, Rick. Appreciate you hopping in and doing a special Bengals podcast. We'll be back this week with our regular Potpourri podcast on Wednesday or Thursday. For Rick Roaring, I'm Richard Skinner. It's been the Skinny Podcast, the Bengals post-draft edition, presented by Blake, the Attorney Mason.